Is this Astros season actually a bad thing for your favorite players? Get to that here on In the Loop. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie alongside John Lopez. Figgy Fig on the ones and twos. And you hanging with us on this Tuesday as well. 713-572-4610 to text the show. I was just catching up on some of the texts during the commercial break after our What's Poppin' segment as we were hopping around in regards to the French fencer that got off of from doping, claiming that it was just from kissing a former partner. On the text line, they called it deep kissing. Someone says it depends on where she kissed him. Someone said they're vampires. And also, Fernando said, skin cream can be transferred by touch, but you don't put that on your lips. So,
well, I'm sure it could have been that second answer, to be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that part.
Yeah. In regards to LeBron, today, 15 years ago, was the decision. Someone said that's when they stopped watching the NBA, was after that. Someone said Nick Wright at the time said he would quit if LeBron did leave, but Nick did not quit his job after it.
Last I checked.
Yes, he took it up a notch.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, and there's a few comments just coming in about they did not like the direction the NBA went after that decision 15 years ago.
Were you working here during that time?
Yeah.
Okay. Who was you working? Was you working with Nick?
I think it was Mark.
Mark. Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm going on 16 plus.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was Mark and I in the mornings. I remember it vividly, you know, the whole thing. And I think the only thing, I didn't mind it per se, because a lot of people, you know, say, hey, I hate the big three and, you know, all this empowerment and it's going too far. And hell, I kind of went down that path a little bit when it comes to, you know, not the superstar players, you know, doing things. But let's not fool ourselves. We were glued to that squad.
We thought that was going to be the best team in history because we never saw anything like that.
To watching that team play. Like just a random Tuesday night. It's like, I remember a big discussion we had. I to this day, I think Chris Bosh got short shrift on that. He was so good on that squad.
Nah, he was, man.
He was really good on that squad. No, I became a big Chris Bosh fan with that. Yeah.
Fernando also said, wasn't there a player in the late 80s who said he was taking his talents somewhere while talking from a hot tub? So I did.
Maybe.
Well, I Googled this, and there was Slate.com about a decade ago did actually a really in-depth dive of this. Mm-hmm. And I guess we probably should have all figured that LeBron wouldn't have an original comment or thought. Of course it had to be, you know, taken from somewhere.
He read it in a book.
So I guess Kobe actually said, I have decided to skip college and take my talent to the NBA in 1996. That's the first athlete they have. And then Lou Williams in 2005 said, I've decided to take my talent to the NBA draft this year. Mm-hmm. So they're comparing that as those are the originals. And then Lou Williams said he's taking his talent to Magic City during COVID, but that's a whole nother thing. And then they even went so far back as Agatha Christie, I guess, in 1922.
Oh, wow.
Was the first they could find on record when she said, I have entertained the idea of taking my talents to that particular market when talking about a murder trial and law and being a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And they said that's the first reference of someone saying taking their talents.
Goodness. Maybe that was the book LeBron was reading.
Yeah.
He read that page. That single page. But it really, it's become because of LeBron.
Oh, for sure.
Like all these high schoolers, it just cracks me up. I'm taking my talents to USC. All right. Yeah, okay. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Then they end up being like,
just in
straight.
A general conversation, to be honest.
Oh, we've said it on
I'm
air.
Taking my talents to,
it's true. Yeah. No, that did come. That was LeBron's doing. I found this text interesting from the 832. They said, I don't think LeBron started the big three. And then they referenced the Rockets of the late 90s with Akeem and then Scottie Pippen and Charles Barkley. Can that be considered a big three?
I don't consider that the big three, man. Mm-hmm. To me, when I think of LeBron starting the big three, I'm thinking of three guys getting together and say, hey, let's all go here.
Yeah.
Or let's team up together type thing.
I agree.
And these are guys in their primes.
Because we're not talking about drafting a big three like the Spurs.
Yeah.
You know, that's just credit to them for doing that.
Their front office.
But it's like free agent and or whatever, manipulating a trade. I truly believe that's what started the big three, and then everybody just
because people like to go to Boston too, say that was a big three, and I'm like, man, that's credit to the front office.
Yeah, they've drafted him.
They drafted Ron, but they also traded for Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
And you know, I think they traded for him.
They traded for both, if I remember correctly. And Ray Allen. I think Ray Allen and Garnett were two separate trades, if I remember.
Yeah, that's credit to the front office right there. Yeah. I don't think Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce said, hey, let's you know what? Let's all get together.
It wasn't player driven.
Yeah, this was player.
This was player
because there was nothing the Cavaliers could do about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's the difference for me because we did get a text just now from the 860. What's up, Connecticut? And they said, I don't understand why Boston doesn't get any flack. It's always LeBron hate regardless of what he does. But yeah, that's the difference as you laid out, Figgy. The Heat was, player driven. They made that happen where the Celtics... Maybe behind the scenes there was some player conversations and Garnett saying like I'd love to team up with you, Paul, in Boston, but yeah, that was Danny Ainge pulling off trade, so that's a big difference.
Now it'd be different if LeBron got traded to the Heat, then you know it wouldn't be all on him, but he had the decision to sign back with Cleveland or go anywhere else, but he talked with Dwayne Wade, he talked to Chris Bosh, they decided who was going to take what money, all that stuff. Yeah, that was player driven right there
for sure. 281 says, yes, it has to be the players choosing to play together. Otherwise, Bill Russell was part of a big six.
Yeah.
And I like this text from the 832. He said he was at a bar the night that LeBron, the night of the decision. And that bar here in Houston said that if LeBron James chooses the Houston Rockets, they will pick up the tab for everybody in the bar. Free drinks for everyone in the bar. He said he spent over $100. Obviously, LeBron did not choose the Rockets, and he had to pay the tab at the end.
He wasn't even on their list.
I was about to say, was they in the conversation?
It was Cleveland, Miami.
New York.
Yes.
I think the Knicks was in the conversation. They've been in the conversation from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well. I did think he was gonna go to the Knicks though, because they were trying to tie in the whole Jay-Z thing, and he's a Yankees fan, always wearing the Yankees. I thought he was gonna go to the Knicks.
Yeah,
they've been saying that every opportunity. That's always been a conversation. It still is a conversation. Still, he's in his 40s.
To this day, yes.
Can the Knicks get LeBron? It's always a talking point. And then the last thing on this, you could always text the show 713-572-4610. I just found some of these interesting. Now I lost the text, so I can't credit you. But here it is from the 936. They said, "What do you think about Paul George saying that the Rockets should get Damian Lillard?" Now Lillard most likely will miss all, if not most, of this upcoming season.
It was in April, man. He's going to miss the whole season.
So it would be beyond this year.
I will probably say, like honestly, I would say sure, why not? But it will have to be for next year.
Right. Yeah, sign like, Jason Tatum too.
and
Achilles team.
Yeah, and plus, I mean, you're not really, you know, paying him a lot of money anyway. He's getting paid, so if it's like for the minimum or something like that for maybe 2 years or something like that, if they could, I don't think he'd want to do that though.
By the way, I found the teams that he was considering on the record: Cavaliers, LeBron, Nets, Knicks.
That's right, because there's in New Jersey at the time.
Yeah, New Jersey Nets, Knicks, Miami Heat. L.A. Clippers, not the Lakers, and the Bulls. I do remember the Bulls now.
I remember the Bulls.
Yeah, I do remember the Bulls.
Yeah,
now.
Man. Quite a few teams.
Because what I remember is, like, he wants to take over from
Michael Jordan
and all that stuff. And
the Clippers.
Clippers, not the Lakers.
What was the Clippers doing during that time?
That was almost, what they call them, Lob City? What they call the Clippers then with Blake Griffin? That was shortly
was that the
after.
Same?
It was shortly after. I don't know if it was quite 2010, but I remember going to one of those games. Yeah, it might have been around then because I went to one of those games in LA just to see them, and I think I went in 2012. So I don't know if Blake Griffin was there yet, Chris Paul, all those guys, but yeah, it was around that time.
Those are the teams he visited.
Oh, okay.
Those six teams.
What a time! Where were you the night of the decision? This day, 15 years ago. 713-572.
And they did have Blake Griffin. That was his first year in the league. Eric Gordon was on that team as well.
Oh, yeah.
Dang. They should have gone there. Could have gotten another free agent. Bosch would have been there, too.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. Yeah. Would have been in L.A. 15 years earlier.
Of course, Clippers are going to clip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody said, you know, because I had mentioned before, I didn't like that everyone found out that decision in real time, just like all of us. Everyone in the league seemed to find out the same time as us fans at home. And someone on the text line pointed out, well, when players get traded, they get told when the trade happens too.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair, but I also think there's some sort of heads up where you talk with the agents let you know, like, hey, they're shopping you, or we're close to a deal or whatever. Like, I don't buy these stories that LeBron had no idea Luka was getting traded to the Lakers. I think people know when these trades are going to go down, at least slightly beforehand. So maybe I'm splitting hairs, but I do think there's a little bit of a difference there where if he just told Dan Gilbert and the Cavs before he got on TV, so like minutes before they went on air, hey, by the way, I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah, and also this is why the league is the way it is right now, man. That's one of the major complaints, mm-hmm. that players are running the league. They doing.
Well, that's why I asked. Was it good? It changed everything.
Yeah. So I mean, at that point, the players doing pretty much whatever they want, because I'm sure a lot of teams and GMs is finding out when players request a trade live on TV or something like that. So.
By the way, the other thing that, and I watched that whole video, well, most of it. The other thing that I found just funny, we should have known LeBron's weirdness, you know, in terms of things that he says he did, you know, or true or not. We should have known back then. He said he didn't decide until he woke up that morning. You remember that?
Yeah.
I woke up this morning.
Yeah. I think he said he talked to his mother or something like that.
Like, sure you did. We should have seen this coming.
Yeah, that's true. My favorite is when they asked him, like, his favorite quote from The Godfather, which is supposedly his favorite movie. And he's like, there's just so many to choose from. Like,
we should have known that from that quote.
Yeah.
That brother don't be reading or watching nothing.
Yeah. There's so many. Yeah. Like, it's hard to pick.
Yeah. All right. Well, just give us one then. You know, anyways, we'll get to the Astros topic coming up a little bit later on. I had teased it. We'll pay off that tease later on. Is the Astros season actually a bad thing for your favorite player? I'll let you know what I mean later on. About an hour from now, we'll get into that, because we went long on the LeBron conversation. But as we said, it was a big day. It changed the NBA. It's a memorable day. For a sports fan, that's one of those you remember where you were. I won't compare it to like JFK or some of these other real-life tragedies, but in the sports world, there's certain things that you'll always remember as they went down, and that's certainly one of them.
What was
years
Cleveland?
Ago.
I mean, I vaguely remember, obviously.
Yeah,
the
so at that time, I was working a night job. I was working at a home for mentally disabled adults.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing third shift. So this was around 9 o'clock. I had to be in by like 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm upset. My dad upset. I get in the car, turn on the radio. And this is a hip-hop station.
Yeah.
And they talking about it. They upset about it.
Yeah.
I go to the gas station. Everybody just talking about, like, man, I can't believe. It was just in the air.
Yeah.
It was just everywhere you went. And I was just going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was just so pissed off. They were so upset. I ain't seen any jerseys burning or nothing like that.
Yeah.
But everybody was just so mad, so shocked.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like people knew it was coming and it wasn't like the second time he left.
And was it the press conference right after or a week after or whatever it was when he said the not one, not two, not three?
I think it was a week later. Yeah.
Because it, with Jim Gray, he's like, you know, all I want to do is put myself in a mm-hmm. good situation. I'm not going to predict championships. And then the next week he's like, not one, not two, not three, not four.
It's just that when you get put in that situation, it's like Frank the Tank in Old School. You know, like, I'm going to take it easy tonight. I'm not going to drink a lot. Don't worry, honey. And then you get with your friends and everyone's partying and you're like, you know what? Let's have a good time.
Let's go.
Yeah. So when LeBron's in front of all the crowd and everyone's going crazy and Dwayne Wade's there, that's, you get wrapped up in it. Anyways, 15 years ago today, that's what happened. I went to Cleveland actually weeks after that happened, on a family trip, and I bought a shirt. I still have the shirt. I should wear it tomorrow, but it says The Lying King with a picture of LeBron. I bought it outside, the stadium, and, it says something else on the shirt that I can't say on air.
He had a bunch of nicknames when he left. I heard LeGon. Somebody used to call him LeGon, LeBum, and all type of stuff, man.
Yeah.
I remember LeBum.
Yeah. I remember even the news, like the news people during that time, man, mm-hmm. they were just being so, that morning show, they were just being so nasty to him. It's just like, I don't even want to see his face. And remember, he had that big old banner in downtown Cleveland. They was tearing that down. Everybody was like,
tear it
down.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that,
yeah. Yeah, tear that stuff down.
972 said at the time, a Dallas radio station made a song called Come to Dallas, LeBron, to try to get him at the time. And last one, 281 says, my where were you moment in sports was when I found out about Tiger Woods getting clubbed by his wife. Yeah, that's another one, too. I remember where I was when I heard about that story, too. Yeah. I was actually in line at Burger King and heard that story. That's another one for sure. Hey, like I said, we'll get to the Astros about an hour from now. But when we come back, time to get some stuff off our chest. It's time for Lunchtime Confessions. We'll do it next on In the Loop.
Obviously, all's well that ends well, Luke. I suppose, because there's a second part to this confession that we're going to get to. But I saw Colton Gordon get hit in the face with a line drive live last night. I thought his face was going to be a mess. I thought his face would have exploded. Now, horrible, horrible visual, I know, I'm sorry. But he got hit square in the face, and in real time, I didn't know where. It ended up being in his forehead or near his hairline or whatever. But I didn't even want to look. I thought for sure, and the other thing I didn't know is the ball wasn't really, you know, squared up. Mm-hmm. It was more of a broken bat liner. But it was still 79 miles per hour off the bat, according to Todd Callis, you know, he said, well, it was only 79, which could have been worse. It absolutely could have been, but I don't care if it was 50. I mean, he got hit square in the face. I didn't even want to look. I thought that his face would have just gotten mashed and really, really ugly scene. But the other part of it, not only did he get hit in the forehead, he did a push-up, got up, got looked at by the athletic trainers, and then continued to pitch. Now, here's the second part that may or may not be good news for the Astros, whose medical staff and athletic training staff has a pretty interesting record.
Yeah.
They kept him in the game. After the game, they announced that he's being watched or studied for a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
You kept him in the game after he took a line drive to the face?
Yeah. It doesn't sound – it's not great because the medical team of the Astros is already so much under fire. Mm-hmm. And then you get the news that he's being evaluated. We got the news after the game, evaluated for a concussion. And I saw somebody tweet that waking up to see the Astros medical team may have allowed a concussed pitcher to continue to pitch last night might not be a top five moment of failure for this medical team this season.
That's the sad part.
Yeah. Yeah.
I ain't even think about that part.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, no big deal. They had worse things.
And now he's being evaluated for concussion after, by the way, they left him in the game and he gave up the lead. He gave up the big runs.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. Mm-hmm. It was always like different but somewhat similar. Whenever a pitcher would have to run and cover first base, and the rule was always like, catcher, go out, give him a breather because they're tired, and now the next batter, you know. And this is almost a similar where, like, I'd have a rule that if a pitcher got hit in the head with a line drive, I don't care if he's okay. If it got him, like, pretty flush, I think I'm taking him out of the game automatically, because what do you expect from a guy after that? And sure enough, two batters later, he gives up the three-run homer to Ramirez that essentially that was – I know the Astros came back to tie it, but then they left him in the next inning, and he gave up he gave up more runs that after the Astros had just tied it. So it almost be my rule of thumb that if my pitcher gets hit by a line drive, even if he says he's okay, even if he checks out okay, like, you know what? Let's get you out of the game, even just based off of just for your performance, and make sure you're good in the clubhouse.
And then after the game is when you decide to evaluate him for a concussion?
Yeah.
Figgy, you saw it. Again, I didn't know it was a broken bat on TV, but it was still 79 miles an hour, square to the head.
Yeah, no, it was to the forehead, man. I'm like, oh, I saw it in real time. I'm like, oh.
Yes.
And I could tell Todd Callis and them didn't realize it hit him directly on the head, on the forehead, until they saw the replay, and they was like, "Ooh,
boy!" What you read is so true and so sad. Like, this isn't even top five of the questionable things that they've done.
Yeah, I know, it's kind of become par for the course at this point now. Where you hear that, it's like, oh, yeah, I can see that. I can see that happening. That's always the worst, though, for me is watching. I'm not a big injury guy. I don't like watching like gruesome injuries, but that line drive to a pitcher last night, fortunately, knock on wood, it wasn't as bad of a visual as some of them. Mm-hmm. I think back of Bryce Flory, like 25 years ago, who was just gushing blood on the mound. Like, it's just, I hate that. That's my biggest fear for these guys. I'm not even out there, but I always worry about the pitcher. Bobby Miller, I think it was for the Dodgers, got hit earlier this year with a 106 mile per hour line drive to the face like that. I can't watch those replays. I feel for these guys. That's terrible.
Yeah.
I was thinking which way to go. I mean, I could have went back to the Savannah Bananas after yesterday, but and my disdain for them. But I think I, my confession is that I don't like drama in my life, but I like to rubberneck drama. I love these reality dating shows, and originally it was the significant other that got me into them, but I can't even blame her anymore because I'm just into them. I mm-hmm. like it. We finished The Ultimatum last night on Netflix, and we had the reunion to watch last night, and it opened up with a lot of drama in the beginning of the reunion, and then it kind of got mellow, and I was like, oh, this is boring. I want the drama, so I don't like it in my life. I don't know what's changed with me or happened to me, though, but the last about 2 years, I love these shows. I watch Love is Blind. I watch The Ultimatum. We watch The Golden Bachelor and Bachelorette.
You watch Golden Bachelor?
Yeah, not the regular Bachelor, only the golden one, because it's more like, you know, it's a little more family friendly. It's a little nicer.
I'll be cringing every time I see those commercials, man. Oh, when man. I'm like, man, what?
Oh, I cringe too, and I am golden. but on our vacation, we actually played a family, The Traitors. Have you watched The Traitors?
No, I've seen the commercials.
So freaking good. So we did The Traitors, and tried to decide who was what and had all these games and stuff. so that's about I think most people lie about not watching reality shows. And I think a lot of people don't even realize it is a reality show. Mm-hmm. I like so-and-so. Well, you know, that's a reality show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Reality air quotes.
Yeah, of course. I really don't watch. What's crazy is my wife is not into reality shows at all. Mm-hmm. She don't watch it at all, but she's into the goofy. To me, I look at this as a reality show, like shows like 9-1-1 and The Rookie and these cheesy fake drama type of shows that come on Fox and ABC.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff that drive me nuts. I'm like, man, it ain't no real action in this. And it all looks so fake and unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the thing. You guys referenced like The Golden Bachelor or those commercials. I cringe at the 9-1-1 commercials during NFL Sunday, and it's the most absurd thing. There's like a tsunami in New York City or something. Like, it's always the most absurd.
Yeah.
Rob Lowe caves in someone's chest doing CPR. Like, it's the most ridiculous stuff. And I'm like, who watches this show? It looks so absurd.
It is.
It is.
Like, it would start off like, oh, man, a helicopter crashed in the Grand Canyon. Oh, my God. And then next thing you know, everybody's alive. Everybody good and well, and they keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of my wife, I told y'all about my situation with the car and how we had to get her car totaled because a tire came out of nowhere on the freeway and hit the front of her car.
Yeah.
So we down to one car right now, and we've been carpooling pretty much.
Oh, Lord.
My confession is I'm not a fan of this at all, man.
Nope.
I don't understand. And this wasn't a thing back in the day where both parents had two cars, or at least where I'm from.
Yeah.
Like, my mom and dad only had one car.
My mom didn't even drive.
My mom and dad had one car, and he would take her to work, come back home, or he'll go to work. And I'm like, man, I don't see how they used to do that back in the day, man.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, so now I'm just, every time I ask, I'm like, what's the schedule? Mm-hmm. What's the schedule looking like? You dropping me off or I'm dropping you off? And then she get here early, and I'm like, I'm not even off work yet. And then whenever I am finished, oh, I'm not going to be there till 3:30. I'm just like, oh, my God, man.
The worst.
I'm just like, man, we got to get another car ASAP, man. It's throwing my whole morning off.
The other thing that just to kind of dovetail off of that is, like, they think it's cool. Like, we can
she
talk
love
more.
It.
Yeah, we can talk. I'm like, why do I want to talk with you?
Dude, she love it so much.
Yes.
And then she said, hey, I wonder, will it be like this if we ever had kids?
Oh,
where
God.
I'm like, no, one of us just going to drop the kid off and keep it moving.
They think it's like an adventure and cool and all that.
Oh, my God. It's the worst, man. I'm just sick of it, man. And
we can have breakfast on the way or get a coffee. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
No.
And even when she did have her own car, she would always try to leave the exact same time I'm trying to leave. I'm like, what's the purpose of this? Because sometimes I get up and I'll be heading out the door. You're like, wait a minute, I'm about to leave out too. I'm like, why we got to leave out together?
I know, exactly.
So now this is her perfect moment to leave out together. and both get in the car and see you later, give me a kiss and all this other stuff. I'm just like, man, I can't even get in my groove.
Yes.
I usually get in my groove on the way to work, man.
Texter says, my wife and I used to do it for about 6 months. I need my me time.
Yes, yeah. I need my me time, my music. I can't play the music I can play because my Bluetooth don't work.
Ah.
But now the music I try to listen to, she's talking over it. And then now she, why are you so quiet? I'm trying to be quiet. Yeah, I'm trying to get prepared for work. I got to get prepared mentally.
Yes.
Because I'm going to be talking for 4 hours.
Yeah, that's right. Then you're not going to want to talk. You just talked for 4 hours. Mm-hmm. You're not going to want to talk in the car ride home.
Why are you so quiet? Yeah. What's wrong with you? I'm like, nothing's wrong.
Yeah. You guys know this. I'll take my occasional week here, week there of vacation. But I very rarely use all my days over the years. I'm going to start using more, at least one more for every week that I take. This year, I took a week off, and I took the following Monday off just so I could have that decompression day, kind of gather myself, rest, you know, whatever, catch up on stuff at the house before I have to come to work. That decompression day is solid gold. Solid gold. And it actually worked even more so for me because, as you can maybe tell, I left Houston, came back to Houston, and the allergies hit.
Mm.
So I had to I took a nap. I caught up on some stuff. So whenever I take a week off from now on, Figgy, add a day. It's going to be a week and a day. That decompression day is gold.
Yeah, I like that idea. Mm-hmm. I'm all for it. I'm also, admittedly, sort of that guy at the start of the vacation, too. I know the travel people might not always like it, but I like to settle in wherever my destination is. First day, let's just relax. Let's not do anything.
Yeah.
Same idea. Get home. The next day, give me a little bit of a debriefing day before I got to jump back into things.
Yes, exactly.
And that's the worst, especially the times I travel, actually had to fly out somewhere and get back around 8 that night, and that Sunday night, and then got to work the next day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the toughest part right there because the way back home is always rough, especially on the flight.
And you always get tired.
Yeah.
That next day.
You just be tired from the traveling and all that stuff. And then you got to work the next day?
Yeah.
That's tough, man.
Add a day from now on.
I like it. Hey, the more days you can take off, the better. Why not?
Exactly.
Add a day on the front and the back if you need. Those are our lunchtime confessions brought to you by the Men's Clinic every day here on In the Loop. Hey, coming up, the Texans offensive line. Everyone is really down on this offensive line, at least outside of Houston. Everyone is down on this O-line right now. How good does it actually have to be for the Texans to achieve their goals this year? We'll talk about it next in the Loop. This is a bit of a callback to another time the three of us were together here on In the Loop.
I didn't plan this one either.
Yeah.
I do have my band shirt on today, like most days. Mm-hmm. Pearl Jam today. So I did my part. It's In the Loop. I'm Luke Morrow in for Reggie alongside John Lopez and Figgy Fig on the steel wheels. You could text the show 713-572-4610. Everybody is down on this Texans offensive line, like really down. How good does it have to actually be in order for the Texans to have the season they'd like? I ask this because I saw Football Insights is the Twitter account. They put this together on Twitter last night. You can find it at @FBall_insights. But it was a composite ranking from four different sources this offseason that did offensive line rankings. And the four sources, you might feel differently about them, but it's Warren Sharp from Sharp Football Analysis. You have Pro Football Focus, and then you have FTN, and you have Fantasy Points are the four sources.
Mm-hmm.
These four sources put together their offensive line rankings this offseason. So what Football Insights did was put together a composite to show the range of where these teams were ranked. For example, the Colts were ranked on these lists anywhere from 4 to 21, right? The Jets are anywhere from 9 to 24, so on and so forth. Only three teams were ranked exactly the same on all four lists. The Eagles, who were number 1 on all four lists, the Broncos, who were number 2 on all four lists, and then the Houston Texans, who were dead last, 32 on all four lists. Obviously, everyone very down on this offensive line, thinking it's the worst in the league right now.
So they're last on every list.
Yeah.
not really a surprise. You know, and there have been other lists where I'm sure they're ranked 31st or 30th. You know, we you know, over the course of the offseason have seen those. But are we underestimating just how good Cole Popovich and well, the entire offensive staff, you know, has to be when it comes to this offensive line? Like we get that they're bringing in some big names, some Patriots guys. They've changed the system, et cetera. But if your offensive line is ranked last in every major, at least on this one, you know, every major gauge, how much can you really do?
I know it. I almost feel, though, like it almost makes me feel better in a weird way about the offensive line, that if everybody, it's one of those things like when you watch Sunday Night Football and everybody on the panel picks the same team to win, and you're like, oh, the other team's going to win, right? Because when everyone, when you have that group think, it's right. Usually the opposite. I almost feel something similar here of, is everybody underrating the group of players? Is this truly the worst offensive line room in the league?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be great. Obviously, it wasn't great last year. They made some changes on paper. The talent might be worse this year than it was last year. But is this truly the worst? Did they just compile the worst group of offensive linemen this offseason in the entire league to the point where everywhere you look, everybody is saying, oh, yeah, Texans, they have the worst offensive line. They're going to have the worst offensive line in the league this year.
I think part of it is, you know, not just Laremy Tunsil, but Shaq Mason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two guys, and Shaq was not having a great year by any stretch, but at least had been there, had been a starter, and, you know, somewhat more respected than the guys you brought in. You know, I get... You know, Trent Brown and others are going to be respected, Cam Robinson, but certainly on the back end of their careers. So, well, I think part of it has to do with the subtraction as much as the addition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Certainly nationally, everyone is really locked into that Laremy Tunsil trade and, mm-hmm. you know, oh, what a bad move. I mean, I compared it at the time we were together. I compared it to the Devers trade, where outside everyone's saying, like, how could you do this? But inside, mm-hmm. You know a little bit more about your guys and your group than the national media or people outside of that locker room. So, I think certainly that's part of it, where everyone looks at that trade and thinks, like, man, what are the Texans doing? They just trade away their best offensive lineman, and they were already bad last year. They're going to be mm-hmm. worse this year.
Mm-hmm.
But to get to your question, I think that has to be the answer about the coaching staff and the changes for Cole Popovich. Mm-hmm. My concern, though, is almost inside that building, are they overrating that subtle change, thinking that's all that needed to be done? You know, you move some of the pieces on the offensive line, but it's not so much about the players. It's about the improvement we made in coaching. And they're really going to coach up this group, but the offensive line is going to be a lot better. I just worry that you're putting too much stock, the organization that is, putting too much stock in just sliding Cole Popovich over from, you know, one chair to the next chair over.
I am too. I mean, let's not forget, Cole Popovich was on this staff last year. And certainly that was part of the, you know, sort of the inner battle, the, you know, differences of opinion that they had. And they believed him enough, and he's got those connections. You know, he's this Patriots John Carroll guy, all that. So he's going to get the benefit of the doubt, I would guess, in some situations. But he's not a miracle worker. You know, I mean, unless he is. You know, I'm not saying they're going to be the worst offensive line in the league. If they just get to the mid-level, it's going to be a wildly successful season, and he should earn some accolades. What I'm saying, though, is if you've lost, you know, one of the best pass blocking tackles in the league, and another guard that admittedly was not playing well, but he was a starting guard that, you know, was consistently there. And you're replacing him with guys that you still don't know. We still don't even know who's going to be playing where outside of Cam Robinson.
For sure.
I mean, I guess, you know, they're going to have, you know, obviously at center they're going to have Andrews, but maybe not. I mean, we don't even know who's going to be the starting five.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's going to be into 2 weeks from today with training camp. Let's try to get some clarity on all this. But to get back to my question in the tease, like, where do the Texans need to be? I guess you kind of just answered it, saying middle of the pack. Where do they need to be on this list? And for those that are in your car, you didn't see this, just to help you out, the Bengals are right ahead of the Texans. Then you have the Seahawks, Giants, Dolphins, Patriots, Browns, Saints, Jaguars. Stop me when you hear a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really down at the bottom of the list. Then you get towards the Steelers, we'll see about them this year. Cowboys, Titans, that's the bottom half of the list. Not a lot of great teams in there. Where do you think the Texans do need to be? I don't think this is the worst offensive line in the league. I certainly don't think it's going to be a top five offensive line in the league. But where do they need to settle in to be able to have the successful season and that turnaround that we're looking for?
Well, obviously, you know, the number one priority is protecting CJ Stroud. But that's not the only priority. If you can be a good running, you know, run blocking team, you know, especially with a healthier Nick Chubb, I think the passing game opens up. And so that's why I'm saying just middle of the pack. If they just get to the middle of the pack, Washington right now, it looks like they're about in the middle. And they've added Tunsil and others as well. If they can just get there, I think it'll all open up for them and they'll be much better on both fronts.
Yeah, the Commanders are right in the middle. They're 16th out of 32 teams. So, yeah, if you're just in that middle of the – I agree with you. I don't think it needs to be a top 5 or 10 offensive line for the Texans to have a good season. Obviously, can't be the worst offensive line in the league. I don't know if that they were even the worst last year. There were a couple teams that gave up, you know, more sacks. What I do find interesting is I've compared the Texans to the Bengals before with their offense, their setup. And when you look at this list, the Bengals are the team right ahead of the Texans. Mm-hmm. So I don't really like that. But you have these two quarterbacks, young, talented quarterbacks that have been getting battered in recent years that you're trying to protect. Neither team has done a good enough job to this point on the offensive line. And then when you look at the weapons, you know, both teams have a really good number one wide receiver, with Ja'Marr Chase and Nico Collins here. And then you even have, you think, a number two receiver that could be really good. By the way, both named Higgins. So there's a lot of similarities mm-hmm. to me between the Texans and the way the Bengals are designed offensively. But the Bengals are also one of those teams that people think is going to have the worst offensive line in the league, and they haven't been able to get it right in recent years. And you've seen it kind of catch up to Burrow and the Bengals, you know, and last year the defense played a big role, but the Bengals missed the playoffs. I just worry that I don't want Stroud to become like Burrow, missing time, and mm-hmm. I don't want the Texans to become like the Bengals, but the way this offense has been put together reminds me a lot of what Cincinnati's been trying to do, and it really hasn't worked out well enough.
Well, and just ahead of them is Miami, and they've had their issues. I believe they're, what, 27th, something like that?
28th.
So the Dolphins, Bengals, and Texans are the teams with, you know, good quarterbacks that have just been battered. And that doesn't look like it, you know, according to them anyway, that's going to change anytime soon. That's the worry, right? That he falls in line. This is what you're talking about more with Tagovailoa and mm-hmm. Burrow than some of these guys at the top of the list that have the good protection. Jalen Hurts, obviously at the very top, but even Baker Mayfield, you know, at third overall, but third best offensive line, you know, if you don't get the blocking that you need, you're going to be talking about him in the same breath as Burrow and Tagovailoa.
Yeah, it comes down to the offensive line. Looking at this list, and again, this is just four sources. It's not mm-hmm. gospel per se, but you look at the teams at the top that you just referenced. The Eagles, well, they're Super Bowl champs. The Broncos, they were a playoff team with a rookie quarterback last year. Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers have been pretty good. Then fourth is the Lions. Fifth is the Vikings. Those were the two teams that won the most games in the NFC last year. Sixth is the Bills. They obviously had a good year last year. Seventh is the Chargers. I know what the Texans did to them in the playoffs, but the Chargers made it to the playoffs. And so my point being, this is obvious stuff. We all know this, but the best teams in the league are the ones that usually have the good offensive lines. And the teams at the bottom of this list that struggled, teams like the Giants and the Patriots and the Browns and the Saints, those are the teams that have the bad offensive lines. So we know it's going to come down. We can talk about the weapons all we want, the 17th ranked running back room, mm-hmm. according to Warren Sharp, all this stuff. But obviously, we all know the linchpin is this offensive line, and it cannot perform like the 32nd best offensive line like everybody seems to think it is right now before we've started the season.
Oh, well, and if it does, then everything, all our expectations are going to have to change. But it is interesting. Like, there's not a lot of deviation at the very top and the very bottom of mm-hmm. this list. Most people agree on the best offensive lines in the league and the worst in the league. There's like Miami goes anywhere from, what, 26 to 28, something like that.
Right.
Giants 26 or 7 to 31. Mm-hmm. So they're all consensus bad offensive lines. And at the very top, good. Now, there's a big area in the middle there.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of deviation. Like the Colts, I think you mentioned it, anywhere from 4th to 21st off best offensive line. So maybe if the Texans, you know, there's opportunity there for all these offensive lines to not, you know, they just don't know. But if the Texans can somehow get up into that middle, then all of a sudden things change.
972 on the text line says, the offensive line is built on the word if. If Blake Fisher emerges, if Juice makes the transition, if Jake Andrews is an upgrade, if Titus makes transition, there's a lot of ifs on this offensive line. I've been saying it about the offense in general, like even the wide receivers, there's some ifs. You know, if Christian Kirk stays healthy, if the rookies develop, I do think there are some questions on this mm-hmm. offense that if they are all answered positively, you could have a really good offense. If they're answered negatively and these rookies don't pan out and Kirk does get injured and the offensive line's a mess, then it could be a little ugly on that side of the football this year.
Yeah, and the 713 brings up a valid point, but I don't know how much better it would make anybody feel. He brought up the how could it be worse?
Yeah.
I get it. It's hard to be a lot worse than they were last year, but that's not you're not looking for, you know, as good as last year. You know, you have to reach another level or else, you know, again, you're going to start talking about C.J. Stroud in the same breath as Burrow and Tua. Mm-hmm. That's not where you want to be.
No, certainly not. 504 said biggest issue at the offensive line is the Texans didn't go after any bigger names. We continue to go after mid-level guys rather than good to elite guys. Yeah, that was I've been saying that all offseason too, and I'm sure others as well, that I like the plan of moving on from certain players. I don't know if I loved some of the names they brought in. I would have liked some bigger names. I think we're all in agreement there. Texans are going to be okay. People have short memories. Yeah, maybe part of it too is obviously just what we saw last year, and so now you automatically think, like, no matter what they did this offseason, you just say, oh yeah, this offensive line's lousy.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. That's why they play the games. It can't be the worst offensive line in the league, though. That's going to doom everything.
Yeah.
And according to these sources, that's how most people, national outlets that cover the NFL, view this offensive line right now.
Mm-hmm.
346 said Texans offensive line will be the Astros of the NFL. I assume he means these names that aren't big names but overperform and surprise a lot of people with how good they are, which takes me to our next topic. Is this Astros season actually a bad thing for your favorite players? I'll explain what I mean when we come back. It's In the Loop.